Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
The individual soul, bewildered by Maya, first takes shelter of fruit of work, karma. Then he takes shelter of karma yoga. At the end, when he comes to the conclusion of karma yoga and jnana yoga, he takes shelter of bhakti yoga. The soul bewildered by Maya does not ascend only one step in the staircase. Ascending only one step of the staircase, you cannot enter the temple of devotional service. We see here is that there's a differentiation made between fruit of work and karma yoga. Karma and karma yoga. Karma yoga means that there is, you're seeing the nature that one has and engaging that for the purpose of upliftment, like that. And so that naturally then leads to jnana. Prabhupada gives that definition many times. He says a devotee will start off being more absorbed in the activities or work of Krishna consciousness. And then after some time, then they're able to kind of understand and apply the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So then that means the jnana yoga is more prominent, or the karma yoga. But still, then one has to come to bhakti, the aspect of bhakti that is being done to please Krishna. Like that. In the beginning, we're generally doing it to get out of the material world, but we have to come to the point where we're doing it actually to please Krishna. If we do it to get out of the material world, that will take us out of the material world. But to develop prema means it has to be done for Krishna. So that's why both have to be done at the same time. So the full process means the karma yoga and the jnana yoga and the bhakti is all going on at the same time. You're performing activities to please Krishna. You're following the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so you understand how to properly perform the activities and who they're to be performed for. And then the bhakti is that it's being done to please Krishna. So in that combination, then it is complete. So that's called bhakti. That's called bhakti. What is taking shelter of fruit of work? Karma. Fruit of work is the activity performed by the body and mind while one is alive in the body. It's interesting that one would have to define that one's in the body. Yeah, because I guess if you're a ghost, you can't really call it karma. Right? Fruit of work is of two kinds, one auspicious and two inauspicious. Oh, also it may be here is that fruit of work here refers to what both, whether it's pious or impious. Is a person who's performing impious activities is also performing fruit of work. They're doing the work to get a result, but the result they're looking for is something sinful. While the pious person, what the result they're looking for is something pious, like that. So that may be what also an aspect of this. By performing inauspicious work, one attains an inauspicious result. Inauspicious work is called either pap, sin, or vikarma, evil work. When one does not perform auspicious work, that is called akarma. Both of these are bad. So here akarma is not meaning in the between material and spiritual. Here it means that it's if you're not performing auspicious work, then that's akarma, because karma means auspicious. So when it's not inauspicious, and then inauspicious, when it's specifically inauspicious, then it's pap or vikarma. So akarma means you just don't follow the work. Like what's that? Karma nyeva dikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana ma karma phalahetu abhur.
What? Ma sangosto
karmani. Yeah. Means the last one is this, akarma, no work. You don't perform your duties. You should do it, you don't do it. You don't necessarily perform a sinful activity that's pap or vikarma, but you're not performing what you should be doing. It means you're lazy about your service. Arjuna leaves his kshatriya duties, just goes to the forest. So that's akarma. He's not performing his work. So that's to be left. And if that deepens, because at some point you have to do something. You cannot do an auspicious work. Okay, that's bad. But you can't do nothing. So therefore you will do something. And then if you're not doing auspicious work, naturally it will be inauspicious. So the one naturally leads into the other. It's just a matter of the time. Auspicious work is good. Work is of three kinds. One, nitya, regular. Two, naimitika, occasional. And three, kamya, desired. This is right out of it. Manu talks about this also. Kamya work, where the desire for personal benefit is very prominent, should be avoided. Nitya and naimitika work, on the other hand, is work prescribed by scripture. So it means that nitya means just what is your regular stuff you're supposed to do. You know, it's just like, say, the brahmachari gets up in the morning, he takes his bath, he goes to the temple, you know, he does his menial service like this, he takes his prasad. This is nitya. Then occasional means, okay, you have a big festival or, you know, some other activity, some big program, and so then they do that. But both of these are proper. Then this kamyaka means that you have a desire that you want fulfilled, so you're doing the work for that desire rather than it's your service. Like that. That's the difference. Though one is going to perform nitya or naimitic work, regular or occasional work, one is doing it for the purpose of fulfilling material desire. In other words, it's being done in the mode of passion. While the karma is supposed to be done from the platform of goodness. That is the... How do you say? It's supposed to be done from the platform of goodness. That's the position. That's how it is. The Vedic literature is supposed... The whole Varnashram system, Dharma, is supposed to be done in the mode of goodness. That you're doing it because you're supposed to do it. Sometimes you hear about that, like when... Ramachandra was running his kingdom, when Bhishma Dev was running the kingdom, that the people weren't worried about fruitive results, and they weren't performing their duties for fruitive results. So that is the actual platform of how Varnashram should be followed. Like that. That's the actual purpose of religion. It's supposed to be done, you do it. But this does not, many times one will say, well, where's the taste? Where's the inspiration? But the thing is things done in the mode of goodness, in the beginning, they don't seem so inspiring, but by doing it, then one gets that taste, because it's subtler. Well, passion is immediately there's a taste and an inspiration to do, but then the results that come and the situations that follow afterwards, when one finds one loses one gets disturbed by it. So therefore it shouldn't be done like that. And in the mode of ignorance, one can't really do it, because then one can't tell what should be done or not be done. So one basically won't follow religion. So Varnashram is supposed to be followed in the mode of goodness. So kamyaka means you're doing it actually in passion. You want a result for what you're doing. So that could also be all these different yajnas that one does for elevation of the heavenly planets and things like that. That those also would be considered kamyaka. That you're doing it because you want this result. While if it's a yajna or things that you're supposed to do, you're obliged as a grihastha to do or something like this, that's just what you're supposed to do. And with that, the benefits come. Like the grihastha, he does the various yajnas and samskars for the children. Right? So it improves their health, improves their digestion, they're influenced by the planets. All that is done. One is not thinking, I'm doing this because of that. I'm doing it because I'm supposed to. We're supposed to do it because it's good to help the children in this way. It makes life easier for them. It's the proper thing, and it clears the path for them to make life easier for them. So it's for their benefit, like that. It's because we're supposed to do it. But what it's not thinking is just that's the only reason I'm doing it. Like, if I'm worried about the health of my child, therefore, you know, here's one way to do it. You know, I take him to the doctor, I do a yajna, I, you know, offer some prayers, you know, I do this and that. You know, so that's, it's not in that category. It's done because it's supposed to be done. Then you get the benefit automatically. So that is the nitya and naimittika. The kamika means is it's only being done because you want the result. If you didn't want the result, then there's a chance that you wouldn't do it.
The naimika, yeah, what's the difference between nitya and naimika?
Nitya means that it's always done. It's going on every day. Naimittika means it's occasionally done. Let's say like Mangalartik is nitya. Ekadasi is naimittik. You know, it only comes twice a month. Janmashtami is naimittik. Like that. Like that. So it's nitya just means it's just what is done regularly every day. You know, every day you get up, you take your bath, you do those are nitya. And naimittik is something you do occasionally. You know, like every day you're chanting 16 rounds. But then on a special day, you know, big fast day, Janmashtami or something, you chant more rounds. You know, or on Ekadasi. These are naimittik. Like that. Does that make sense? So then, kamika work, where the desire for personal benefit is very prominent, should be avoided. Nitya naimittik work, on the other hand, is work prescribed by scripture. Considering what should and should not be done, the scriptures explain what is nitya, naimittik, and kamika work. Akarma, failure to do auspicious work, and vikarma, inauspicious work, are not the same as karma, auspicious work. When one avoids kamya work, then his work is nitya or naimittika, work that brings auspiciousness to the body, the mind, other people, or humanity at large is called nitya work. Everyone should perform nitya work. When work prompted by a temporary circumstances is like nitya work in this way, it is called naimittik work. Chanting Gayatri, offering obeisances, and cleanliness are activities that maintain one's own body and the welfare of society at large. So also do honest dealings and protection of they who should be protected. All these are nitya work. Duties to one's deceased parents, other like duties, and atonement of sins are all naimittik work. Nitya and naimittik work bring good to the world. Therefore, the great sages ordered that such auspicious work should be performed. Considering the different natures of the human beings, they thus describe what is called the varnashram system, according to their natural tendency for work. Human beings are thus divided into four classes: 1. Brahmana, 2. Kshatriya, 3. Vaishya, 4. Shudra. In this material world, there are also four other divisions called ashramas. The four ashramas are 1. Grihastha, 2. Brahmachari, 3. Vanaprastha, and 4. Sannyas. They who are found fond of performing akarma and vikarma work are called antyaja, the lowest, and nirashrama, outside the ashram system. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, okay.
Because antyaja just refers to their varna, which is mixed, like that. You get antyajas or shankara. You have varna shankara, so we know that because the varna, they're mixes of varnas, and so then they have a tendency not to follow, they don't follow any of the things, so they fall outside because they're interested in not doing the work or in doing nonsense work. So then they're known as antyaja, or outside. Antya means outside the system. And then if you take it as, how you say, ashram shankara, means they don't perform the duties of ashram, then you get this what did he mention here? What was the word?
Antyaja?
After antyaja, nirashrama, means no ashram. They don't follow. You know, you have somebody, they're not married, right? They have no house or anything. At the same time, then they associate very freely with the opposite sex. So this is near ashrama. They don't have an ashram. Right? Or they're grihastas, they don't take care of the duties, you know. It means mother has children, but she's always busy off doing something else and not taking care of them. These are all examples, or the husband is, you know, doing but not taking care of the family. You know, he's off at the pub, you know, like this. So this is all nirashrama. It means that they're not really, I say, they don't follow the ashram dharma. So it's outside the ashram system. The different varnas, classes, are determined according to 1, birth, 2, nature, 3, work, and 4, qualities. Wherever the varnas are determined by birth, the meaning of the varnashram system is lost. The different ashramas are determined according to these states. In other words, nature, work, and qualities is really what one sees. It means in varna, then the nature of the parents will be taken into consideration, because the child is a combination of the consciousness of the parents. So therefore, it has effect. It means you will naturally, whatever your varna is supposed to be, means from your previous life you have a nature, and then that nature is a state of consciousness, state of the mind. So that will then create all the senses in the body around it, what will be the next body. So naturally, whichever family has that consciousness that matches your consciousness, then they're put together. It's arranged. You know, you'll take birth wherever it is. You know, someplace in this universe. If need, they'll transfer you to another universe to find the right situation. So then, it's there. So therefore, that's why birth, many times you can see things. But if it's only on birth, then the system doesn't work like that. Because someone's born in a Brahmin family, but the child's not a Brahmin. But because he's born in a Brahmin family, he's called a Brahmin. But he's not a Brahmin. So therefore, his kids won't be Brahmins. But because he was a Brahmin, they're said to be born in a Brahmin family. And like this, it just continues. So you just have generations back, they stop being Brahmins. But because it's working by birth. But in the Vedic system, birth is first taken, because you naturally, the consciousness of the parents are there. Especially the more they're trained, the more it's similar. That the parents, they are focused. Because, how you say? What is in your heart is what you desire for your child. What you think is the best is what the situation you want for the child. So if you value, let's say, you know, study or, you know, preaching or something, then that's what you want for your child. You want him to be a good, you know, well-versed in the Shastras, a good preacher, or if administration and all these things, and you want someone else who will administrate and properly take care of the dependents. So then, you know, you get a Kshatriya that way, you get a, you know, someone who, you know, they're doing business, that's the most, you know, someone who can carry on the family business, the family traditions, and you get your Vaishya like this, or, you know, someone's a great musician, and then that's their consciousness naturally, then their child, and from a very early age, and they can train them, and then they'll be very expert, and the family traditions will carry on. So, like this, then you can see it comes more, it's very, very similar. But if the parents don't know, you know, and especially, you know, in the Western scenario where you're dealing with antyaja nirashrama people, is, you know, for them sex is just a good fun. So therefore they create living entities who in their mind is sex is good fun. So this is called the Shishna Devas. The Shishna Devas are those people who basically sex is all in all. That's what they're into. Sometimes they're also called Shishnodaras. Shishna Udara means they're into eating and sex, like that. So we see that that's pretty prominent in the Western lifestyle. So naturally, then they create more of the same, because that's what their interest is. Then they produce a kid whose interest is the same thing. So therefore the birth does have an aspect, but it's only for, you know, a general idea. You see a kid from this family, he'll most likely have those qualities. You then expose them to Krishna consciousness, you know, for us, and to training that would be similar to what they're from. But if it's seen that it's different, then it changes. That's the thing about the Vedic system, is that nature, work, and qualities. You see the nature, you see what is the work, and you see what the qualities are. Because they may have a nature, but you see what they can do in that nature. Right? They may have a business nature, but maybe they can only run a pawn shop. Someone else has the same business nature, but they can run, you know, a multinational, you know, business. So their work is different. And then the qualities, you see, what is the nature of how they can deal, how they interact, in what aspects they can deal within that work, within that nature. So those three are actually what's important. So seeing those, then one can see what one is doing.
Is it always deterministic that the child depends on the consciousness of the parents? Is it possible that sometimes the parents may have very good consciousness, but the child need not be...
If they pick an auspicious time, yes, you could. It means the influence of the planets are there. That's why sometimes you see really dull parents and super bright kids. Because the time when the child was conceived was actually a good time for intelligence. So it doesn't seem to match. So you do get that. But in the Vedic system, then things are planned. So you'll generally see that amongst those who don't plan. It means those who don't follow Garbhadham. But those who do, then they plan these things like that. It's a very interesting thing. Is India, most conservative culture, then planning the child, conceiving the child, and having discussions about it is perfectly fine. Right? But externally you don't see anything, right? While the West, which is so promiscuous, you know, that people, it just, sex is the way anything is sold. But at the same time, to talk about sex is not proper. It's a very, very unique thing. You can't talk about it, it's private, it's this, it's that. Because for them it's just sense gratification, and they're very attached to their sense gratification, therefore it's a private thing. But actually, conceiving a child, that child's going to have influence on the society. You know, so therefore, it's part of, you know, the social duties. So it can be, therefore, discussed. You know, one can talk to the priest, find out what is proper time, like this. These things can be seen, and then arrangements are made, and then like that. Prabhupada mentions that sometimes then the king would the, you know, the you know, at least, I don't know how great and big, if it was to the kingdom, or at least in the court, that they picked a particular auspicious time, and then it's announced that this is the time that the prince will be conceived. And then everybody can appreciate, yes, that nakshatra and this planet and this and that, that will make for a very great leader and everything. It already inspires people. The kid hasn't even been conceived yet, and they're already inspired. You know, because you have to inspire in people, you know, these things like the kings, that the faith and all that. So it's a completely different approach. It's just, it's part of the duties within the ashram. It's not, you know, your private sense gratification. You know, it's just part of the duties. So in other words, it goes from ignorance and passion to goodness. Therefore, those children then are situated in goodness, and they can follow the Vedic culture. While these others have difficulty, yeah.
And it also can be that the karma of the parents, that they have to suffer some particular thing, like Venu.
Yeah, no, that'll happen. It means that'll happen, of course. But it's the standard thing. Who knows what happened there at that moment? Because there's only a moment. Mm-hmm. So that's why so much planning, practice, and that is there. Because in that moment, the consciousness has to be right. So if you know, from one side or the other, it's not at that time, then you may get a bad result. It means Venu was powerful. Mm-hmm. He had the basic principles of the, how you say, Kshatriya nature. But he was what would be called
overambitious.
Yeah, overambitious, but also when they fall from the position, there's a name for that. When they're not following properly, you know, and like that. So it just took on the demoniac mentality, you know. Like Duryodhana also, very strong and all that, but his father was very attached. Blind person is very attached to anything, you know. Means is that, it's just like if, you know, they're trying to walk and you try to help them. You don't see that they just, you know, very naturally, just very calmly, just this and that. They grab, you know, because they're looking for shelter. So he's a very, blind person will be grabby. So then he's very, very, will be very attached to his wife. Very, so therefore he'll get a son who's very attached. You know, so these kind of things, you can see, if you study it nicely, you can always see the effect of the parents in the child, like we see is that the, you know, how he was born is his mother, you know, because of her own attachments to her own position, being main queen, and she thought she was, you know, very, very special and all that, and so she couldn't, and non-devotional. You know, she knows the religion, she knows all the different things, but she can't practically apply it. She's too proud of her position, too attached to her position. So she can't appreciate the nature of Vyasadeva, great, powerful sage, incarnation of the Lord. That doesn't matter, just that he's dirty and stinky, that's all. And she's a nice, clean, you know, petite queen, so, you know, it just doesn't match. You know, so therefore, then she closed her eyes, so then her son was blind. The other one was afraid, so then, therefore, her son was white. You know, and then, but the maidservant, she was respectful and performed, you know, the whole respect and duties very properly. Therefore, her son was a great Vaishnava. Like that. So you can see it. It's basically directly connected. But the point is, all work, the result is depends upon Krishna. And so how Krishna wants it to work out and all that then is, you know, like that. That is, one can't say. That's why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then he said, if I knew that I could have, you know, kids who were, you know, great devotees, I'd have 100 kids. But since I'm not sure, confident that that would be what will happen, therefore I'll stay away from the whole process. You know? So therefore, there's always that possibility that things aren't quite right.
Like Advaita Acharya.
Yeah. No, you had, three kids were good, three kids were bad. Like that. So if it can happen to them, the Prabhupada's kids also. Because his wife wasn't that devotional. And so then he had three kids, not very devotional. That's why one performs the duties, but one can't be attached to the results. Like that. That doesn't mean one's neglectful, that's akarma. Neglectful of duties is akarma. So nitya dharma, that means that one is performing the duty properly, but one is not attached to the result. If one's attached to the result, that's kamya.
The law of karma is definite, isn't it? So if particular combination of things are there, then automatically the result will also be there, isn't it?
Yeah, but now, yes, what you say is true, but now I would just like to ask, what is the purpose of this question?
No.
What is the underlying purpose? Is the idea that I'm not responsible?
No.
The result came out bad, so I'm not actually responsible because it's previous karma and this and that. You understand? You have to be very careful because the philosophy can be used so many ways. Like that. You understand? Is that some people will refuse to take responsibility because it's karma and Krishna's in control and this and that. That's Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra always, the bottom line, when he doesn't know what to do, he knows what's right, but he can't follow it, and therefore he approves improper activities. He always makes this point, is that, what can we do? We're under the control of fate anyway. And so he just refuses from day one to accept responsibility for his actions. Even at the end, he's sitting there, and he's happily living there. You know, the Pandavas have just, you know, killed all his sons, wiped out his whole kingdom. They're so kind, they let him be the king of Hastinapur because he's been sitting there, you know, rather than, you know, they'll manage the world and he'll run the city of Hastinapur. And he's sitting, he's happy, going on. And then Vidura has to come back and just say, you're like a dog living off the scraps of, you know, others. He says, you know, it's like, you spent your whole life against these people and now you're living off of them. He says, you know, what's this? You're old guy anyway. So you should give this up. You know? So only then he became mature. Otherwise, before that, it was very useless. So one has to be careful that one doesn't not take responsibility. If there's something wrong, it is because of us. Yes, it's because of karma, but the karma has come because of us, not because of someone else. Like that. It means someone else's karma won't come to you. Maya is a better manager than that. Like that. You know, she's expert. The example is given, you have a whole herd of cows, thousands of cows. And when the cows come back and the calves are released, and even though there's thousands of cows, the calf goes straight to its mother. It doesn't run around looking this way, that way. They just run through the crowd and go right straight to the mother. So the same way karma is like that. It knows exactly who it belongs to and it comes right to the person. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, my question. Is there any uncertainty factor? No. Any? Like for example, Bhaktivedanta Siddhartha Thakur said that still there's no guarantee as well. Is there any uncertainty factor?
Means point is when you get into it, chaos can be computed. There is an equation for chaos. Right? Before, no. But if chaos can be factorized, then where's the question of that being a possibility? For every action there's an equal reaction. Just the way it is. Does that make sense? So nothing happens out of chance. Because we don't know where is the source of the reaction we're getting. Therefore, it's just called fate or providence. Like that. But everyone gets exactly what they're due.
If you're introspective, Krishna tends to give you an indication of why you get what you're doing.
Yeah. If you're introspection. I think Prabhupada even mentions that. If you study, you can see where all the things are coming from. Like that. You come across that? I kind of remember coming across that.
There's something that Bishop Upanishad about the introspection and Krishna will reveal to you.
Yeah.
Purpose.
Yeah. Like that. And in any case, if it comes, it's because it's connected to correcting a mentality. Like that. Because even the devotees technically aren't working under karma. But because the mentalities are still there of karma, they have to be corrected by the same method that you would correct a karmi. Like that. Does that make sense? It means the karmi performs a particular activity because he has a particular mundane desire. So the devotee still may have that mundane desire, though he doesn't do the activity. So then to correct that desire, then the same reaction that would happen for that person with that mundane desire is the same reaction that will come to the devotee, because that reaction is meant to correct that mentality. The whole material world is designed to correct the mentality of the living entity to take them back to Godhead. So therefore, actually, if you look at it, whatever is going on in this world is actually, the whole system is only meant for devotees. It means to rectify the soul and make them into devotees. But since most people aren't willing to cooperate with that, therefore, then they fall into the categories of, you know, sinful, karma, jnana, yoga, like this. But Krishna says there's only one path. He doesn't say there's the karma path, the jnana path, the yoga. There's only one path, but depending where you're situated on the path, you'll have that title. You know? So someone who's working in that small realm of karma, you know, from the earth to the heavenly planets and back and all this, then they're called karmis. Those who are working from the earth to the Brahman and back, then that will be called jnanis, and those from the earth to, you know, into the, how you say, to the, how you say, into the, to, you know, the form of the Lord, into Mahavishnu, and then back, then that will all be called yogis. And then the devotee is from here to the spiritual realm. Like that. So it's.
At what point is the jiva given to, or taken care of, the deva prakriti over the prakriti of this world, that they don't have karma anymore, and it's everything.
When they take up the process, the devotional process, when they come in contact with the devotees of the Lord, and they actually take their association and start following the instructions. It is said one Hare Krishna can destroy all the sins of the universe. So then we generally will take, say then, that one pure chanting.
Mm-hmm.
No, but Nama Bas will give liberation.
Mm-hmm.
So that means already the material world has been wiped out with Nama Bas, and Nama Bas is not considered pure.
Mm-hmm.
Though within Nama Bas you may have offensive and clearing stages, but in either case, it's Nama Bas can give liberation. So therefore that definition doesn't apply. We want to apply it because we're feeling that the reactions that are happening to us are karma. But it's not. It's just Krishna's taking care. But it looks like our karma because it matches our mundane mentality.
Would it be wrong for an aspiring devotee to say that he has no karma?
The devotee themselves understands that it's karma, because even though it's Krishna's arranging it, it's still because of his previous activities. So he's getting those results of the previous activities, but that's being arranged by Krishna, you know, like that. So therefore it's different. For the karmi, it will give, you know, material suffering, material happiness. But for the devotee, it gives, you know, realization.
Isn't it also that we'll always, we need karma to maintain a body, so there'll always be karma in that regard?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, something is there. Because Krishna takes it all away, but he can't take everything away. Because if he took it all away, then we wouldn't have a gross or subtle body. Then we'd just be a jiva without a spiritual body that still has the desire to enjoy. And then there would be, so therefore, enough is left to maintain the body.
Is it possible for the jiva who has been taken over by the deva prakriti to again be cut off from that mercy and again enter into the world of karma, creating reactions to his work?
Well, only if there's the mad elephant effect. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. They fall away from devotional service, this, that. But according to the mentality, they'll get the reactions that match that mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Just like it said, if Krishna mentions in Gita, if you, after a short time, then you become deviated from devotional service, then you'll go to the, by what's deviated you know, whatever it is, you'll get that, you'll go to the heavenly planets and enjoy that. You know, if it's wealth, you'll get so much wealth. If it's sense gratification, you'll get that. If it's position, you'll get that. You know, whatever it is, if it's beauty, you'll get whatever it is. Then you'll get that, and after enjoying for so long, then one will come back here and then take birth in an aristocratic family. Therefore, it's mentioned that those who are born in aristocratic families have done devotional service. No one's born in an aristocratic family without having done. Like that. So if they take it up, if they just stay like that and don't get involved, then, you know, they're just, you know, another, you know, materialist, but in a good situation of karma. If they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, because they've done before, they come in contact with it and they accept it, then they become devotees. They just continue where they left off. If they reject it, they become the Naradamas. That's the you know, technical definition of a Naradama.
Mm-hmm.
One who has given the opportunity to take devotional service and rejection. Right? So that's why they're considered worse. And that's why the Naradama is sometimes classified as the Vaishya, because that's the aristocratic families.
Mm-hmm.
Is that also applied to people who take up the devotional process in this life and then reject it?
Depends basically how they reject it. If rejection simply means they get swayed and get into sense gratification, that's there. If they take up the mad elephant offense, yes, than it would. The other just means they're weak-hearted. And that's, so then,
that's why Jagai and Madai are said to be the most sinful, because they were born in high-class aristocratic Brahmin families, but there was no sin that they had not committed.
Yeah.
So they're the prime example of Naradama.
Yeah, they're the worst.
They didn't commit offense.
To Vaishnavas. Mm-hmm. Well, except for that one with Nittai.
Yeah.
You know, and then they would have gotten it for that one. Nittai saved them, otherwise that would have been it.
Yes. What would be the definition of Lord Krishna's words as aristocratic? Because it's not the Western so-called aristocratic.
But they're coming down, but it may be just they were not very... How you say? The 11th canto explains it. If someone is born in India, everything, because India is the station, right? Everything, you go to everywhere else from here, there, and you come back to here. You're going from the lower planets, you come to India. You go to the heavenly planets, you come back to India. From India, then it goes out. So if someone born here is, let's say, religious but not God conscious, like that, and the religiousness is not that strong, then the next birth, it's enough to maintain human life, but not in India, so then they'll be born in the West. And then from there, then, you know, God only knows where they go, but, you know, but that's the system. So even there, it's because of that, though it may be second generation of that, like Prabhupada was mentioning, that, John Lennon, he said in his previous life he had been an aristocratic gentleman in Calcutta who was very much interested in music, like that. Because in those days, I mean, it's even now, it's a little bit, but you go back even 20 years, but especially if you go back 100 years or more, then all the aristocratic families, all the children learned music and all these fine arts and everything like that. It was a standard thing. You'd go into their house, you'd see a room that was just musical instruments, and that's where they would practice. They would bring in good teachers, teach their children. It was very much a valued part of the education, was these fine aspects of culture. So then he would have been in such a wealthy position, and then from there, then... there. So most likely is, you know, musician in the heavenly planets. Like that, then run out of enough karma to keep you there, and then you come here, and then that, and then from there, then went there, and then from there, then, how you say, meet Japanese lady and go to hell. So basically, like that. Like that. His father said he was a good boy, but he was ruined by that lady. So aristocratic means wealthy. Nobility means royalty, you know, the Kshatriya class. Though at the same time you can say aristocracy means Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya. But specifically, it means all three, specifically it means Vaishya. You know, like that kind of a class. And then nobility is something else, like you have also in England. You have the nobility and you have the aristocracy. So those who are in the seat to be in the line, they're born in nobility families, they're in the line. They sit in the seat, so they maintain the position. Those who are born in it but won't sit in the seat, they're called aristocracy. So then it's also, that's another way. So they can be also that in between. Because they can be from the nobility class that's not performing, you know, aspects of nobility. Or you see, you know, nowadays they're very popular, you know, from the Brahminical class, but they're involved more in the business and other things. So the basic aspect is means that they're performing the duties on that level. So that comes because one is performed the pious activities of devotional service. Something. That doesn't mean directly. You know, you see something, you saw the Rathkar too. Took some prasad, something was there. So the more that is there, the more you progressed, then the more one will come close. When it gets more, then Krishna said, when they become more advanced, they become steady, but they become deviated. Then they don't go to the heavenly planets, because enjoyment isn't their purpose. They're born into the family of devotees. That's why he says those that are born into the family of devotees, they're only meant for devotional service. So the idea that we have to prepare them for, you know, mundane activities of the material world, then they would have been, why would they be born in a family that sells stickers or sells baseball hats at, you know, some rock concert like that. If they were meant to make it in the world, they wouldn't be born in
a sticker selling family. They'd be born in a family that, you know, has a regular, you know, lifestyle. They're born in devotee families because they're meant to be devotees. That's the only purpose, probably makes that quite clear. So it's one therefore then sees the position. That makes sense.
This is a question on responsibility, Maharaj. In terms of Grihastha Ashram, if there is a fall down and then there's a conception from that, is there any, what is the result of that in terms of these, you know, the child being full grown? Is there anything that those parents can do to rectify or to somehow or other take a responsible action after they've had that fall down?
To basically, you know, expose the child to as much Krishna consciousness as possible. Because still they're born in a devotee family. So that means then just instead of getting someone who is, you know, a very advanced devotee, they would probably end up with, you know, a fringy or something.
A demigod.
A demigod, you know, a three regulative principle wallow.
If there's been that fall down, the other sannyasis have any benefit or not?
Yeah, they have, but it's just the thing is, it's just you're just starting with the quality is less. But the point is these are the material considerations, and the material field, you would definitely see a difference. But at the same time, there's the aspect of karma of the child also, is that it may have been a great person, but because they themselves did some certain nonsense, and there's a reaction for that, so therefore they were born in a substandard situation. But at the same time, as they have great qualities, so then they may overcome that, you know, like that. Another aspect that the soul is always independent at any moment to surrender to the Lord, and that surrender is not blocked by anything material. So therefore, even such children, they could become the greatest devotees. It's not a problem, you know. So we see like that Haridas Thakur appeared in the Mohammedan family, you know. So these points then are shown. It's not that otherwise then the tendency will be only those who are born in very, you know, well situated, you know, devotional families or Brahmin families like that. They can become devotees, you know. But then we've seen the example in history of so many who are, become great devotees, or even just great personalities, the Satyakama Jagala. So then he wanted to study under Gotama. He approached him and he said, I would like to become your student. And he said, fine, you know, what is your gotra and everything? You know, because it's a natural interaction when you do your yajnas and that, you have to say, you know, my name of this gotra, I salute you. You know, it's just part of the whole Vedic interaction, like that. So then he said, oh, I don't know, because he was a little kid. So he said, I'll go ask my mother. So he went back, asked his mother, and his mother said, I don't know, so many men come, I wouldn't know which man was, you know, your father. And so, you know, so then he went back and told Gotama. He says, I asked my mother, but she said she doesn't know because so many men come to her, so it could have been anyone. You know, may have been a Brahmin, but she's really not sure. Like that. So then Gotama said, he accepted him because he said only a Brahmin could be so straightforward. You know, Shudra would lie because he just wants to get. So would Avaisha. Kshatriya would be, he wouldn't be able to say. His shame, his pride, he wouldn't be able to say. He just wouldn't come back. Avaisha and a Shudra then would try, but they would cheat. So a Brahmin just comes and just openly says, that's the way it is, so, you know, do what you like. And so he was accepted. And he's a very prominent person here in the Vedas, Satyakama Jamali. He's one of, you know, he's very famous. Like that. So he became very, very great. I think he became, Brahman realized by herding the cows. Right? So he was just sent out, he had, I think there were 400 cows or 600 cows. Gotam said, you take the cows out, and when there's 1,000, then you come bring them back. And while he was out there, then, you know, just observing, you know, everything around him, then he came to the Brahman realization. Like that. So it's, therefore, that's why birth is not taken seriously It's taken as an indication, but it's not taken as a conclusion.
So the tendency sometimes for devotees to blame their birth on their inability to follow rules and regulations, etc., is just an excuse rather than a reality?
It's an excuse. It will have influence. It will make it harder. But the point is the ultimate thing is why is that there? It's because we want it. We're accustomed to sinful life. You know, like I said, the antijas, you know, sin is their inspiration. It is their life. You know, it's like Ravi Shankar said, what's it? My music, my life. So for the antijas, it's my sin, my life. You know, it's like that. So I think it was Bon Maharaj or something was talking to some person. Yeah, and then he was telling him, you know, what is the, you know, what do you do to have to qualify? And you say, you know, no meeting, no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication. The guy just said, well, what's left of life? That is life. That's all we do. You know, that is our lifestyle, you know. So so naturally it will be difficult because we're inclined towards those. Therefore, one appears in such families and one, that's one's inclination. But if one seriously, you know, becomes introspective and sees and tries to give up that attachment, then one can cross it like that, because the soul is pure. But one has to want, because by nature one will be attracted. One may become repulsed, like we see before. That was the standard, you know, it's generally the standard system when we see, you know, for new devotees is the reason Krishna consciousness is good because everything else is so bad, you know, nonsense karmis and meat eaters and like this. It's repulsion, which is just the other side of attraction, like that. So, but one has to get beyond that and get into the point is that Krishna consciousness on its own is nice, and you're not interested in the other things. Like you don't do skiing because, you know, soccer is crazy. You do skiing because you like it. You know, so the same way as Krishna consciousness, you do it because it's light. You know, so in the beginning, the neophyte will have all these different kinds of, you know, reasons, and it's as long as they keep one in Krishna consciousness, fine. But ultimately, one has to come to the stage where one is performing Krishna consciousness because one likes Krishna consciousness, one wants to please Krishna, one wants to advance. So that's what before he was talking about. That's the Madhyama platform, like that. Or specifically here, that's the Raganuga platform. You're doing it because you like to do it, rather than if you don't do it, then it'll be bad for you, or you'll go to hell, or like this.
So the only obstacles really are attachments.
Yeah, they're serious obstacles, but it's not that they can't be overcome. Otherwise, Prabhupada wouldn't have inspired us that. Finish everything up in one life. That means he's giving the blessings that it can be done. But one just has to be willing to let go of the attachments. Like that. But at the same time, one is not foolish. One is letting go of them as they go. Like that. One doesn't move ahead quicker than one can handle. It's natural. You take one step, and then with time you get accustomed to that, then you see the next step, then the next step. If you just jump ahead, then you might find you have to take a few steps back to actually situate yourself. So therefore, that natural. But even in Krishna consciousness, that step was made, that jump was made for Krishna. It's still not a spiritual loss. You know, it may not be the best. Like we see, Prabhupada wasn't too worried that devotees would try to completely dedicate themselves, detach themselves, and just preach, and they would take sannyas and like this. And even if they fall away, for Prabhupada it wasn't a big... It's not good. But his point is then either if you understand that it's not good now that you've had a retaste or re-remembrance of material life, so if you're ready to, you know, situate yourself in the sannyas ashram again and preach, then he would set them up back like that. You know, it wasn't that, no, now that you've fallen down, you can't taste. No, he would just immediately put them back. And if they felt, no, I'd rather be a grihasta, then he'd say, okay, now just continue the same preaching you were doing before. don't let the preaching stop. You know, so we would see is that he would just see what is the position, but it was not. But in the Vedic thing, sannyasi falls, then it's just he should go to the Triveni and drown himself. There's no other recommendation. It's not like there's, you know, some other alternatives are given. So it's so in Vedic thing, it's taken very seriously because all they're working with is karma. What work they do, then they get that result. But here, the activities of karma and jnana are used as tools for devotional service. They themselves aren't what's important. You know, it's that endeavor to do that for Krishna and get that result for Krishna. So that's their value. But at the same time, to neglect that because saying, oh, it's not important, then would be akarma. Because then what are you going to do? Like that. No one does nothing like that. There's no soul who does nothing. So you either have to be performing devotional activities, pious activities, or nonsense. There's no other alternative. So if we give up the pious activities, so unless we can situate ourselves in devotional activities fully, then we have to dovetail the pious into devotional service. You know, so then you get the nishkam karma yoga, which is considered, you know, devotional. Because then it's mixed with, it has the jnana in it, the knowledge for liberation. So then it takes us out. Well, the sakam, it progresses, but it's slower. You're doing it for Krishna, but it's, you know, the results are yours, and then you'll give some of that result to Krishna. Or maybe you'll give the whole result to Krishna, but then you take the credit for having given it. So you take something from it. It's not clean, the whole exchange. Naishkarmi then means it's clean. It's Krishna's work, it's Krishna's result. I do my best because the result's for Krishna. You know, if it's for myself, I may or may not do, depending on how I'm inspired. But because it's for Krishna, therefore I give my best. You know, and so to give that up, then that's akarma, which Arjuna was going to do. So that's why the whole Gita was spoken, to get him properly situated in devotional service. So, anything else on this one? Or? Yes.
What are the requirements for someone to take sannyas? Because I don't understand. I thought it was sannyasi is supposed to be able to control his senses and be free from the gross body attractions. So how is that Srila Prabhupada would accept to put him back into such a situation if it was going to be artificial or something?
No, artificial means it's just like this. Grihastha ashram is also artificial. Yes. You know, because, you know, why, we went through this the other day, you know, why are we looking at it? You have living entities who are looking for their own purposes, but they're pious enough to, that there's some exchange. You know, it's like, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. You know, the modern podity is, you know, is not like that. I'll scratch my back, you also scratch my back. You know, but, you know, that's why it doesn't work so well. But it's also artificial, like that, because you see people nowadays, they don't want to do the duties. And they're saying it's artificial. I don't want to do it, why I should do it? I want to be free, I don't want to take care of this, I don't want to do that, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do any of these things. Why I should force myself? So, it's also quite artificial. So what's necessary is what is the determination and qualification to do. Because no one has 100%. You know, you don't. Nothing in the material world is perfect. So you don't. Neither do you get the perfect grihastha, the perfect brahmacharya, the perfect. So perfection is described as iron and fire. Is that you're trying to take whatever you have, and you have basically the qualifications to do it, and then you make that endeavor. So, in other words, they have a understanding that there is nothing to gain in this world. And they don't want to endeavor for that anymore. So then they make that attempt. So generally you see if someone's from a more pious background, it's easier. Right? Like that. But someone from a more sinful background, then it's more delicate. If they let themselves slide, the amount that they can slip is much farther than someone who's not. But we see that even the great souls would have problems. Like, you know, it's like Vishwamitra, you know, when he fell down with Menaka, then, you know, everybody didn't rise up in arms and say, well, now we should get married. No. Then, you know, when he had his determination that this was crazy, and so then he carried on like that. But if he felt attracted or attached, then yes, then naturally, then he should continue as a grihastha. So it depends upon very much what is the determination. But it has to be real. It means that one has to have the basics to work with, like that. If the attachments are too much, that one can't even make a good attempt at it, then it's better to wait. Then at least, then one should try Vanaprastha. Like that. That would be much better. But if the qualifications are seen, that it's can work in that way, then it's done. But it's never said that it's perfect. So therefore, the general principle is it should go nicely, but there may be mistakes. Just like a grihastha is supposed to be grihastha brahmachari. Like that. A grihastha is not a grihastha brahmachari, is not a grihastha, a grihamedi. So a grihastha is having sex not for the purpose of creating children, is an animal. They're not even a human being. Like that. Even an animal is better, because an animal only has sex in season. And the result is a child. So grihasthas, so-called grihasthas, they're animals. They're not humans. They may be animals who are engaged in devotional service. Hanuman was also an animal. You know, Nila, you know, he was a bear. Jambavan's a bear. So it's no bar from animals performing devotional service. But one shouldn't say what's natural, normal, this, that. It's nonsense. So that is also a fall down. But in the modern scenario, it's considered okay. When you come from a background where, you know, people have sex constantly, then it's considered okay, it's normal. But then, in that kind of thing, then, therefore, it should also be, the sannyasis are trying, if they don't make it, it's not good, but it's not at the end of the world. If we have Satyuga standards for the sannyasis, and we have end of the Kali Yuga standards for the grihasthas, then this is a warped mentality. It's not balanced. It's not normal. It's not a balanced mentality. Though we may say it's contemporary, it's not contemporary. If we want to get contemporary, the New Age people would definitely give them a break. You know? It's not contemporary. It's just nonsense. So the whole thing is we are who we are. You know, when you take a bunch of antijas and try to, you know, create varnashram, then it works. Like, in the Vedic history, divorce is never even heard of. Does anyone bat an eye that someone's just got married for the third time? No one even cares. Right? Someone's telling me, you know, some of these, you know, communities, you know, around the world, the kids, you know, wouldn't have a clue. They're living with their mother that has a new father, and their father lives next door with someone else. And then they have a brother who's then from another father over there. And it's just, you know, like this. And we think it's perfectly normal. Because the parents are looking at life through their own eyes. They don't at all consider the children. Screws the children's head right around. But they don't care. Why are they getting married again? For themselves. Sometimes you get someone lost a husband or something like this. They have the kids asking, you know, they want a new daddy. You know, you go out and buy one at the Kmart or something. You know? But it's generally more rare. More rare. But in any case, these things, so we let these go by, so then these also should be understood. Like that. So we have to see is that there's a standard. That is the whole thing, is that there's a standard. Krishna makes the standard. And if we come up to that standard, that's good. If we don't come up to this standard, it's not good. So therefore, since it's not good, then we should see how to, in a progressive, positive way, make the steps to become good. Like that. acknowledge what position we're in. That's called humility. And it's a great opulence. It's the key to devotional service. But if we just say, no, it's perfectly normal, and we make a philosophy, that's called pride. And the door to devotional service will never be opened for such a person. They'll progress, but then they'll be stuck. Like that. You can't get pure love of God if that's pride. So therefore, it applies to everybody. Not just the proud sannyasis, the proud GBC, the proud temple president, the proud gurus. Also the proud grihastha. The proud brahmachari. You know? The proud anybody. It's pride is not wanted. So humility is important. So one sees where we are at, but not make a philosophy. Just accept, I'm in this position, and we're trying. We're trying. You know? And then, if we're actually trying, Krishna will give help and we'll make it. But one should be very careful to avoid making some kind of philosophy and condoning it. Like that. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the devotee should see through the eyes of the guru. Mm. So Srila Prabhupada's vision was of love, and his love was so much that he would forgive and mm-hmm. want the devotees to keep trying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes in the movement we break mm-hmm. apart just because we're trying to judge without looking through Srila Prabhupada's eyes.
Yeah.
That's very nice what you were saying about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it means that also seeing our position, we have to understand that we're not that position. It means we have the contaminated consciousness that put it in this position, but we are not a fallen grihastha, fallen sannyasi, fallen whatever this and that. That is the condition of our gross and subtle body. We're not that. But at the same time, we have that because we wanted it. So if we can change our desire, then the other also changes. The gross comes from the subtle. So the desires of the subtle body will be cleared when the desires of the consciousness are purified. Then we'll find the anomalies in the subtle body will go away. And that will naturally then correct the gross body. Right? Like that. So much lust, is natural lust is there in the body. That's because we wanted it. We wanted to enjoy the lusty sensations. But if we change the consciousness, then either it will change the body, or we won't be affected by it. We'll also change our situation, right? It means one should very much avoid staying up late, not getting up in the morning, you know, properly, getting up late, maybe chanting, maybe not, then staying up late the next night, you know, sitting in bed watching some steamy movie on the television. Because that's a really good, opportunity for Varna Shankara. Like that. So one also, if one's serious, then one will see, okay, if I want to do this, then I have to situate myself more in goodness. That means sadhana, that means regulation, it means all these things. And then as one can, one does that. One progresses to move towards establishing such a regiment for oneself that will bring one to there. One may be by determination to do it very quickly, or one may take time. But at least one knows one is moving, and one never becomes you don't become engrossed in the mood of I'm so terrible, and then getting into enjoying that I'm so terrible. You know, self-pity, like that. It means one understands one's fallen, but one is not piteous of oneself. Because that's also just self-centered. It means I'm not the body and mind, so therefore I have to move on. I'm in this fallen state, I move on from there. Like that, but if we get into self-pity and all this thing, then we enjoy staying there, and then we tell others, yes, I'm so fallen, I'm so this and that. But if they don't respond the way we want them to, then we feel bad. Why he's not responding, you know. What if they say, yeah, I mean, you know, your situation is pretty bad. We get very upset. They're supposed to say, no, we're all trying our best and this and that, and, you know, like this. And then you go to the next person, yes, you know, I'm so fallen, and they, oh, don't worry about it, you know, Krishna will help you, this, that. But if someone just says, hey, you know, you're right, you know, it's like, you know, you better get together. Everyone's talking about it, you know, if you get this together, your definitely points in the community would go up. Oh, you'd be fried, you'd be angry. Who is this guy? Who does he think he is? Right? So, therefore, we can understand it's not real humility, and not really accepting the position. It's just another trick of Maya to make us still self-centered, like that. So that's why we have to take ourselves, even though we're fallen, but situate ourselves in goodness. Because the self-pity is ignorance. You know? And if it's taken too far, one takes it too strongly, then you see some devotees even commit suicide. Right? But, you know, what's it got to do with the grossness of the body? They're the soul. They're not going to go away. Like, killing yourself doesn't solve the problem. You know, you take all your desires with you. So it's not going to solve anything. But they get so absorbed that that's ignorance. So therefore you have to situate yourself in goodness. And then from that platform, look at it and see what's wrong. And then step by step, take oneself out of it. Does that make some sense? Yeah. Yeah,
Maharaj, equivision and Brahman vision are sort of something to be aspired for. Practically speaking, how can we practice Varnashram without maintaining a separatist mentality and vision?
Because it's done for Krishna. That's the meaning of Nishkam Karma. That's why the whole process is explained in the first 12 chapters of Gita. Then the technical points of how to see are then given in those later chapters. But until you've understood it, then those are delicate tools that can lead to impersonalism. Therefore, only once one is situated in devotional path, understands the progress, that yoga ladder, then those tools can be used. Otherwise, they're dangerous tools. Now, they're good for liberation, but they can lead to impersonal. Like that, so they're very powerful tools. You know, said with the sword of knowledge, you cut your way out of this material world. You know, so those are used. So the equipoise, equivision, but you're situated in a certain situation, a certain conditioned nature. Therefore, it has duties. The conditioned nature, this particular conditioned nature, has this combination of varna and ashram duties. Therefore, I just engage it, just like we see the table, you know. And so we see that it just should be used as a table. But because we're Krishna conscious, we use it as a table for Krishna, so we put a Bhagavatam on top of it, or like that. You know, we don't put our feet on top of it, like that. So therefore, the Varnashram system can still be followed. But that's the Nishkam Karma Yoga, is that it's being followed with that Brahman vision. Therefore, it gets you to liberation. But at the same time, as you're doing it for Krishna, in Krishna consciousness, so that cultivates beyond the Brahman vision. So that brings one into prema.
For example, you're talking about nirashram. But as a preacher, especially one aspiring to that kind of equivision of seeing Krishna within everyone, then you'll deal with all those who are happy to chant or take a book regardless of whether the body is a male or female.
Mm-hmm.
So that you don't see that as nirashram.
No, because the thing is still you follow the etiquette. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't see Prabhupada down there, you know, with his arms around the girls. You know, he was very strict. You don't find, women didn't do any personal service for him, direct, you know. They may have cooked or this, they weren't massaging his feet. You know, I never saw anyone do an arti to him. Personally, you know, they, you know, so many of these things, they just wouldn't. He's a sannyasi, so therefore he would perform those duties, because the preacher always is a madhyama. Because an uttama doesn't preach. There's no question of preaching for an uttama on an uttama platform. Sutta Sukadev, it's all Brahman. So the kid's yelling at him, it's Brahman, passing urine on him, it's Brahman, you know, stealing his food, it's all Brahman, so it doesn't matter. So it's just, you know, just the manifestations, the constant changing manifestations of the, of the Brahman, you know, that's we see as the material world. You know, it's temporary manifestation has changed, but it's all Brahman. This principle is Brahman, though it may change its forms, but it's Brahman. So in there, there's no need to preach, because everybody's Brahman anyway. They're all soul and everything. So then they come down to the Madhyama platform, make the distinction, so then you can preach to the person at his level. If you don't make the distinction, if they talk on that level, who will understand? Like that. So they talk down, they talk to the audience. That was one of the, basically in the I think the first page in Mahabharata, it's made that point is made that Suta Goswami spoke to the sages with you know language and example that they could understand. So he was speaking to them, he wasn't speaking to another audience. So that's the preacher. He knows the audience, he knows the examples, he knows what he's speaking. So then he says those things. And then that matches, that gets good result. So therefore he has to come to the plane of discrimination. So that's the Madhyama platform. That's why it says the Uttamas come down to the Madhyama platform. It gives them pleasure because they're doing this nice service for Krishna. It means the Brahman platform itself in the material world gives no pleasure. It's just Brahman. So it just means there's no material unhappiness, but there's no spiritual happiness. From Brahman realization, there's no spiritual happiness. It just lacks material happiness, material pain, basically. So Krishna consciousness, but then if they're absorbed in that, then that's called an avatut. They just don't even deal with what's here. They just leave the workings of the body up to the modes of nature. Modes of nature are running it anyway. They'll take care of it, however it's supposed to be taken care of. They don't take any interest in it. So they're absorbed in the spiritual world. So those persons you can't even relate to at all. There's no question of anyone from this plane relating to a person like that, because they're not here. The body's here, but they're not. You know? So therefore then they come down so there's pleasure, and then coming down to this plane and then interacting for Krishna's pleasure, that brings pleasure. But what's in between, on the material side, there's no pleasure. You know, so therefore, that's why it says they have great pleasure coming down to the Madhyama platform and preaching. Because the mundane platform of Uttam, I mean, just that level of liberation, there's no pleasure there. Like that. So it's an interesting...
Isn't Jivadaya also one of the qualities of Bhav?
Yeah. But you see, when we're talking about Bhav, we're not talking Brahma Bhuta. It means someone on Brahma Bhuta is in Bhav. But Bhav means they're already imbued with God consciousness. Liberation doesn't require any Krishna consciousness. It just requires that Brahman consciousness. It means that, of course, Krishna is Brahman, but it's not complete. It's just Sat, there's no Chit, there's no Ananda. So then Bhava means the emphasis is on the Ananda. You know, the Sat and Chit elements are already, whatever, they're taken care of. But the Ananda is the transcendental Ananda is there. So it's in a different category. One crosses through Brahma Bhuta to, you know, accept the spiritual form. But then that's where it ends. Like that. Mm-hmm. Can I get some? You had something in the corner?
Destination of the fallen sannyasi who takes his life in
Trivani? They would be completely purified. They'd probably get a very pure next birth. Next birth would be very pure. Like, you know, if they're devotees, then depending upon their position, they'd either go to the heavenly planets or they would take birth in the family of devotees. Or if they thought of Krishna, then they would go to wherever. It depends upon that. But in any case, if they stayed within the material world, their situation would be extremely purified. Because that will remove the sin of the other. You know, so they won't get the reactions for that. Like that.
About to suicide. Looks like many devotees give up their bodies just stopping eating.
Stopping eating is another thing. That's another. That, I think, what is it? I can't remember, it's Padma Purana. One of them says, one who leaves this world by giving up eating never takes birth again. Mm. Like that. So that's considered, that is the way to go. Mm-hmm. Not by some other artificial means. You just give up eating, because someone has to be very determined to do that. The other, just there has to be an acute emotional situation, you know. And then once one starts the process, even if one decides he doesn't want to do it, it's too late. You know, once you've jumped off a building, it's a little late to decide, well, maybe I don't want to do this, you know. You know, so like this, it's difficult. But the fasting is, if you have the determination, you can go through. And if you don't have the determination, at least, you know, means that there'll be some seriousness, some will have been experienced. And one's always can decide to adjust. But there should be cause for that. You know, it should be generally, it means that the body is finished, it's going to die. Mm-hmm. So rather than just continue it on for no reason, one just gives up eating and then just leaves that way. You know, that's the traditional method. You know, probably preferred that rather than being in the hospital with all tubes and this and that, you know. And that's, but then one should pick a proper situation, you know, in the association of devotees, like that, in the proper place, you know. Like that. Is that okay? You had something?
It was a little further back, but just when you were speaking about humility and understanding one's position, sometimes when devotees say, I'm being natural and who I really am, that who I really am is not who they really are. You touched on it.
Mm.
One devotee was telling me he's just being natural and accepting his position, who he is. And I said, I'm trying to be natural and accept who I am. But right now, I don't know who I am. And who I am is somewhere up there, and I'm trying to remove every piece of conditioning that's in the way of who I am, to realize that.
Mm.
And devotees who use that philosophy of accepting who I am seem to forget that it's not who they are.
Yeah.
It's who they are is someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's very true. It's very important. Because what they're saying is, accepting who I am means accepting the dictates of my mind. Because the particular desires that one has are just the desires of the mind, that the mind in its particular conditioned state, present conditioned state, considers valuable, then we say that's us, but it's not us. You know, like you're saying, is that the real accepting who we are is that I'm serving Krishna. And then you'll find it's interesting, along with that, is they're accepting who they are, but they don't allow anyone else to act according to their heart. So if they want to be strict in Krishna consciousness, then they'll say that that's not being honest. So that means, and actually, then it's a very bigoted, self-centered position, because if the whole thing is being natural, then okay, someone could be naturally what their mind says, naturally what their intelligence, naturally what their ego says, you know, or naturally what is the position of the soul. So they would be accommodating of all natural states. But it's only a natural state is what they're doing. And even then, it's only what they're doing. If their natural state is three regulator principles, if someone else's natural state is two regulator principles, they'll say the two regulator principle person is in Maya. So it's natural means what is their view on the world, you know, and who is in their group of, who sees, you know, similar, you know, what do you call it, you know, swajanas, who is their close associates who think in the same way. You know, and then you have the Atmaban Manite Jagat principle. So then, naturally, then the whole world thinks like that, and you're the only one that's different, so therefore, why don't you get with it and be like everybody else? But if you're being natural, you're being who you are, so it's natural you'll be different from everybody else, but that's not accepted. So it's just a philosophy so that they don't feel too, it's difficult to be harsh with yourself. It's difficult to be introspective. It's difficult to admit you're wrong or to take responsibility for yourself. Like that. Very difficult because of ego. Like that. So if we change the ego that I'm serving to Krishna, then it becomes very easy. But if we have difficulty with that, then it's going to naturally create problem. You know? It's naturally going to create problem. But I like your point, yeah, trying to be natural, get back to the original, who we are. That's the real conclusion. And so it was interesting, one devotee I had heard explain was talking about Prabhupada and saying he's the most natural person, the most normal person. You know, some will object to the words because we say natural normal is to be mundane. But no, he's normal. Everybody else in this world is crazy. Right? Means the residents of the spiritual world, they're normal. And everybody here is crazy. So Prabhupada, therefore, is the most normal person. Everything he does is just very proper. No trips, no nothing. It's just very pleasantly and properly done.
Sula.
Huh?
Sula something.
Yeah, like that.
Can you understand someone love them? That they're very, they do things, they're
spiritual. Yeah. Yeah, because it would be
discrimination.
Yeah, discrimination, also this fixed nishtha, and not wavering. And they'll do things according to the scriptures. Now, either for the purpose that the scriptures say to do it, or because they like to do it. But in any case, what they do will be according to scripture. Well, the Kanista is trying to adjust with that. So either they're doing it from what scripture says, because scripture says they should do it, but they want the result. So that makes him Kanista. Well, the Madhyam may also be doing it because the scriptures say, but he's not interested in the result. It's the results for Krishna. So that makes a distinction, even between those who are on Vaidhi. Because the Madhyam and Vaidhi and the Kanista and Vaidhi, the Madhyam and Vaidhi is the results for Krishna, and the Kanista and Vaidhi, generally, there's some portion of the results for themselves. Like that.
So Mahakrishna has got a very wonderful definition of sadhana bhakti. He said it meant bringing the sadhana, gross body, into line with the needs of the soul.
This was too fast for the Zukina.
I'm sorry. He said it meant bringing the subtle and gross body into line with the needs of the soul.
It's very nice. Okay. So I think we should end on that note. Right.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
jai
Jai Jai Gaurakrishna
Hare Hare Om.